first in the exciting new series. It's Winner Take the Universe, when the name of the game is Psychodrome, by Simon Hawk, author of the Time Wars series. 4MS. Prologue. I didn't know if I was in a war or if Psychodrome was playing mind games. It works both ways. You play Psychodrome and Psychodrome plays you. If this was an hallucinact, the only way to tell would be when it was over. Assuming I survived. A hallucinact is not supposed to kill you, but if your mind believes your death is real, it might persuade your body. And my body was getting some heavy doses of reality. The combat armor I was wearing was supposed to be state-of-the-art equipment, but it was state-of-the-art equipment that had been contracted out to the lowest bidder. Something you don't really want to think about while under heavy fire. I couldn't help thinking about it because the recirculating and cooling system in my suit wasn't working properly. I was sweating like a pig and having trouble breathing. It felt like being locked in an ambulatory sauna bath. The home audience was getting a graphic taste of what it felt like to be a human tank, advancing through a bug-infested jungle that was bursting into flame. Of course, if this particular tank took a direct hit from a plasma rocket, the death of the home audience would only be a vicarious experience, appropriately edited, and they would then switch channels and tune into another fantasy. I, on the other hand, would either wake up screaming or experience an incredibly brief instant of unutterable agony before I turned into a smoking, gelatinous puddle on the jungle floor. That's entertainment. A war always got good ratings. There was a time when I didn't understand that. As a child, I played with toys of violence and rained death upon my playmates, who usually stubbornly refused to die, insisting that I'd missed them. There would then ensue heated arguments concerning their mortality. Sometimes the consensus of opinion would declare a prepubescent little soldier KIA, but it didn't really matter except as a momentary blow to pride. We all lived to die another day. I didn't understand it. Then. The ugly truth is that violence is life-affirming. If it's a fantasy, it gives you the illusion, the vicarious experience, of confronting the reality of your own ephemeral existence. If what you're witnessing is real, it especially compels your fascination. It may frighten you, outrage you, shock you, or depress you, but in some deeply buried aspect of your psyche, there is a frightened little guilt-racked thing that huddles like a Judas, making you feel good because it isn't happening to you. No matter how real the illusion or how graphic the reality, you will survive to die another day. Escapist entertainment, with the accent on escape. They say it's cathartic, but if it really is a cleansing, purifying thing, we seem to need repeated doses of it, and Psychodrome supplies them in abundance. I glanced over to the right and saw Breck advancing on my flank, looking like some giant ugly robot painted OD green. Winters was about a dozen or so yards ahead of us, taking the point. Behind us were about 30 other grunts, mercenaries all, encased in combat armor and moving ponderously through the jungle with a whine of servo motors, while the enemy laid down a barrage of plasma rockets all around. They couldn't see us yet, but they had a fairly good idea where we were, and their idea was getting better all the time. There was a major difference between the other mercenaries and Breck, Winters, and myself. The others were getting paid extremely well to risk their lives for Consolidated Developers, Inc., while the three of us were being provided free of charge in exchange for exclusive broadcast rights. Oh, and there was one other difference, too. All they had to do was stay alive and defeat the opposition, the forces of a rival multinational disputing CDI's claim to this insect-ridden hothouse of a planet. The three of us had a somewhat loftier objective. Together, or independently, we were supposed to win a combat decoration. And, with any luck, we'd win ours before players on competing teams won theirs, which would enable us to advance to the next stage of the gaming round. There was no safe way to make an overflight of the objective and drop down on the enemy, because a high-altitude drop meant plenty of time for them to pick us off, and a low-altitude drop meant making easy targets of the personnel carriers. Bombing was out of the question, as was the use of orbital particle beam weaponry. Not only because it would destroy the equipment and facilities we were hoping to capture intact, but because it was against the rules. It was all right for corporations to have private armies pounding each other into jelly on some undeveloped piece of rock, but it had to be done in a way that didn't violate any international weapons treaties. No government wanted to get involved officially, not only for political reasons, but for economic ones as well. No one wanted to back what could wind up being the losing side. It was easier to sit back and let the corporations fight a limited war that jeopardized no one except the mercenaries fighting it. The executives battled in their boardrooms while the soldiers fought on the disputed territory, and one way or another, the claim was eventually settled. Then the winter came in, developed the real estate, and once a colony was formally established, the politicians recognized it and took advantage of a fait accompli with no territorial disputes and no investment outlay. The political ramifications of this conflict did not concern me any more than did the outcome. I couldn't care less who won, so long as one of the three of us managed to win a combat decoration. The sooner that happened, the sooner we'd be out of the jungle and on our way to the next scenario of the gaming round. Some game. You could get killed playing this game. And to think the only reason I got into it was because I wanted to survive. A plasma rocket hit so close that I was caught in the blast and almost knocked over. No mean feat, considering the suits weigh several tons. A huge sheet of flame washed over me as I continued to advance through the roiling black and orange cloud. And I felt the temperature inside the suit rise appreciably. Breck's laconic chuckle came over my helmet speaker.
Ha! Getting a bit warm for you, O'Toole.
Cut the chatter.
The group commander broke in.
With all due respect, Major.
I heard Breck say, his smooth Teutonic voice as dry as sherry.
The enemy now has a fix on our position. I would advise a change of strategy before several well-placed rockets take out the entire unit.
The Major hesitated. When a man like Rutiger Breck spoke, even a veteran mercenary group commander listened. Before Breck lost his arm, he was an officer in the SS. The commandos of the Special Service are a very strange, rare breed. They're bioengineered and trained for service from the creche. Their motto is, born to raise hell. And they are utterly capable of doing it.
What would you advise, Breck?
Open skirmish formation. And I would send out several flankers to deploy jetpacks and lay down covering fire. We cannot effectively return fire until we break free of the brush. Without covering fire, we may never have that opportunity.
Anybody who takes up to the air is going to be a target,
said the Major.
And if the insects foul the jetpack.
A jump is necessary for the flankers to get into position,
said Breck.
As for their being targets, it will help the unit if they draw enemy fire. At the moment, all of us are targets, are we not?
That's asking several men to commit suicide just so the rest of us can get into position,
said the Major. I could almost hear Breck shrug.
A calculated risk,
he said.
One I am well prepared to take. O'Toole will join me, won't you, O'Toole?
Thanks, Rudy. Thanks loads.
Just hopping in to tell you that O'Toole is the narrator. It's not going to come up for a while, and I don't want you to be confused.
There, you see? We have two volunteers already. Stone, what do you say? Shall we make it to party?
I couldn't see Stone Winters anymore. She was too far ahead, but her voice came back strong and steady.
I'm game.
You realize they can probably hear every word you're saying, don't you? Said the Major.
And what difference does it make?
Said Breck.
It's getting a bit warm down here, and I could use a little air.
Okay, Breck, go ahead.
The Major said.
It's your ass. Form open skirmish line.
Stone, you jump flank right. I'll take the left,
said Breck.
O'Toole, you take left flank with me.
I got it.
Breck,
I said.
I sure hope you know what you're doing. You can't win the game by playing safe, O'Toole. We jump on three.
Do try not to get shot down immediately. Stand by. One, two, three.
I damned Breck to hell and hit the thrusters on my jetpack. The audience at home was going to get a first-class show. I could imagine some fat slob sitting in his living room, plugged into his psych fidelity set, and sharing my experience. He was about to lift off with me into a blaze of glory, flying high above the jungle in his combat armor, with his trusty autopulsor spitting death down at the enemy, while the air around him was full of bugs and plasma rockets and autopulsor fire and more bugs, and I hoped he had a heart condition so the blind panic I was feeling would rupture his aorta! No such luck, though. Sci-fi sets had biofeedback sensors that would shut down the system if the armchair glory hound got too excited. Unfortunately, I had no such safeguards. I felt the press of G-forces as the suit jets fired and hurled me above the treetops as if the armor didn't weigh a thing. Several thoughts flew through my mind at once. I thought about what would happen if the jets got fouled or if the retros wouldn't fire. I'd make a large hole when I landed. I thought about what would happen if I flew right into a plasma rocket or autopulsar ground fire. I could take some autopulsar fire and still retain my suit integrity, but a plasma rocket would incinerate me in an instant. And I thought about what I would do to Breck when I realized that only Stone and I had made the jump. The son of a bitch had suckered us, and now we were committed. I saw the giant dome of our objective below and directly ahead of us, and then I had no more time for thinking as the air around me filled with enemy fire. Stone had angled off away from me to the right of where our unit was positioned, and I angled to the left, then started my descent. I spotted the enemy batteries in their small emplacement domes and opened up on them from the air. Amazingly, I hit one and was gratified by the sight of a lovely fireball where a rocket launcher had been a moment earlier, making things highly unpleasant for me. And then I realized I had made a very bad mistake. I was coming in too close. It was all happening too fast for a combat rookie like myself, and I was not only going to land too close, I was going to land right on top of them. I felt autopulsar blasts slamming into my suit as I hit my retros and burned several enemy soldiers who weren't quick enough to dive out of the way. I crashed the hole my retros had burned in the emplacement dome and felt the shock through my spine as I landed. A shock that would have driven my legs clear up into my shoulders if the suit had not absorbed most of it. I started firing blindly in every direction. I was so scared that it wasn't until almost half an hour later that I noticed the smell inside my suit. I was still firing when I suddenly realized there was no one left to shoot at. I stepped over several bodies and took control of the rocket launcher. All I could think about was taking out the other gun emplacements before they decided to drop a rocket on me. I didn't really know how to handle the controls, but the knowledge must have been programmed into me during game orientation because I was functioning on automatic pilot. I felt the entire emplacement swivel on its pad, and the launcher lowered its elevation, angling down toward the other gun emplacements. They had to see what I was up to, and I was praying that I could do it to them before they did it to me. I saw one of the other batteries start to swivel towards me, and I had opened fire. I scored a direct hit, and an orange and black cloud shaped like a giant ball flowered and rose into the sky. I immediately tracked onto another target and opened fire again and saw a wonderful repeat performance. Then the unit was breaking cover and moving out into the open in a spread out skirmish line, firing at will. Then there was a flash of fire, and I don't remember what happened after that. I woke up flat on my back, a considerable distance from the emplacement dome. My suit integrity was intact, which was astonishing when I saw how battered and blackened it was on the outside. There was an incessant ringing in my ears, and blood was running from my nose to my mouth. Breck's handsome, hard-featured face was staring down at me from behind the faceplate of his helmet. His glittering ice-blue eyes were gazing at me mockingly, and I heard his chuckle over the ringing in my ears.
Well done, O'Toole. Congratulations. You're a hero.
Where the hell were you?
Jets malfunctioned. Damn this thing. They seem to be working perfectly now.
He grinned.
I just heard from Mondongo. You were a major heat. The ratings were spectacular. They had to edit out certain involuntary reactions, so you came out looking like a one-man war machine. The Major's coming and putting you in for commendation. We can leave as soon as you've changed out of your shorts.
The last thing I heard before I passed out again was that goddamned chuckle. I was growing to hate that chuckle almost as much as I was growing to hate Breck. Some teammate. Some game. End of prologue.